Hello and welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 235, after much delay, and we're going to talk about the elephant in the room. A tale that starts with an actual, literal elephant and ends up with reality. We're also going to talk about snow socks, what they are, what they're for, and how they can help you. A product review of Baofeng radios, which might be useful to you, if illegal, and a place to visit that has little tiny statues all over the place. Folks, welcome back. I am sorry for not producing a podcast in a while. I did record a podcast while I was on the Danube River cruise, and if I can put this in the most erudite terms possible, it sucked. It was one of the worst things I have ever made, and I decided not to inflict it upon you. So it is now in the ether. It is gone. And we're starting over with this one. Sometimes it is better to not release something than to release something, just anything, to fill up space. You know, I do have a quality threshold on this podcast. I know it's hard to believe, but there is one, and my work last week did not meet it, and I apologize for that. So we're going to do this week. And this week, I have to also start with another apology, because I'm going to break one of the primary rules I have for this podcast. Temporarily, I'm not changing the format of the podcast, and I am about to say something that you won't like, regardless of whoever you are. But I have to say it. I have to get it out of my system, and I have to address it, and I'm just going to do it. So folks, I'm going to talk about politics for just a little bit. Don't hang up the phone. Hang up the phone. Don't stop listening. Don't turn it off. I mean, you can if you want. I promise you I have a point, and it does relate to van life. But I have to do this. I've tried to avoid it too long. And I'm going to screw this up. I know I'm going to screw it up. So I ask you to be my friend here just a moment, and let me screw this up so that I can move on with my life. I just came back from the Danube River, a wonderful trip with two dozen really exceptionally kind people. It was a great trip, one of the best ones we've ever done. But there was a problem. There was, shall we say, an elephant in the room. And I was really stressing about this, and I started stressing about it months ago, because when I looked at the calendar, I realized that this trip began immediately after the U.S. election, like the same day. Some of us had left already on November 5th, and most of us were traveling on November 6th, including myself. Why is this an issue? Because this was one of the most momentous elections in U.S. history, and we were about to embark on this cruise where the results of that election were going to be a huge topic of discussion. And had the election gone in a certain direction, it wouldn't have been a problem. But it went in the other direction, where it was a problem. And I needed to address it. And I was really stressing out how to address this, because I knew that a lot of the people on this trip were going to be very upset by the results of the election, and I didn't want it to ruin their very precious and very expensive vacation. And as my role as the group leader, the curator, he who must be blamed, whatever you want to call me, I felt it was necessary for me to address the issue. And so I worried about it and worried about it. I wrote some scripts. I did outlines. I asked AI what I should do. AI wasn't terribly useful in this situation. And I had hoped to actually have a brief meeting with a preacher to discuss what wisdom they might have, because those folks actually know about things like this. At least the good ones do, and I had the good fortune to know a good one. But I didn't get the chance. Things were too fast. And so I found myself on the ship meeting with people for the very first time, and I simply asked them to consider all the effort and time and money people had put into this vacation, and that they should think before they start talking about the election, because they may be with people who haven't had time to process it yet. You see, we didn't have any time to even realize what the implications of the results of the election were. And it was difficult. But people did seem to take what I said to heart, and we managed to have a wonderful time. But there were definitely some poignant moments. We started the trip in Hungary, and the government of Hungary is pretty much aligned with the new government that the U.S. will be having. And the people in Hungary were very sympathetic to us, and that was interesting. So by now, you probably know where I am on the political spectrum, and you shouldn't. I mean, this show isn't about politics, this show's about van life, so my personal politics shouldn't apply, but they do inform who I am, and now I feel like they weigh heavily. So I'm going to tell you about my personal politics just to get it out of the way, and if you don't like them, I totally understand. Thank you for listening up to this point, and I hope you find something more appropriate for you. If you do like them, keep listening, because you might change your mind, because my politics are a little bit complicated, and I think I have a position that would anger just about everybody. So, just very briefly, folks, I'm an independent. I am not a member of either party. In the state of Illinois, I am registered as a Republican. And there goes half the audience. In the last election, I voted for Kamala Harris. And there goes the other half of the audience. And so now I am talking to myself. So self, you know, you probably should have let everyone know before you left that you are actually not one of those Cheney Republicans. You are simply an independent who votes issue by issue by issue. But you were a very, very strong supporter of Kamala Harris in this election, not because she was the perfect candidate, but because her goals were most closely aligned with your goals. That is to say, my goals, because I'm talking to myself and I'm confusing everybody. There it is. It's out there. And I mention this because these are the kind of folks that I tend to travel with. And I've had people say they want to come on some of these trips, and I've had a look at their Facebook profiles, and their profiles were filled with lots of stuff that I don't think would mesh well with the group. So, I mean, there it is. Do what you will with that. But I want to take it to another place. The incoming administration, who I do not support, I think is going to create a surge in van life. A large surge. I think we're going to see a lot more people living in vehicles, and I think those people are probably not going to be the people who are doing so by choice. And I am mindful that my role here as a podcast producer on the subject of van life, I'm going to have to spend more time on that. So I'm going to shift the focus of this podcast a little bit in the direction of folks who don't have a lot of money and are trying to make this work. And that won't be too hard. I've always done the big tent approach. These folks have always been a big part of the podcast. But I'm going to spend less time talking about $250,000 Airstream camper vans and more time talking about how to avoid getting arrested when you're out of gas in a town that outlaws van life. I don't have an answer for that yet. Actually, I do, but I'm not going to address that right now. When I learned about the election, I posted on Facebook that I don't know what the answer is to what's about to happen to us, but I do know that it involves kindness. And I got pushback on that. A lot of people thought kindness was over. It's done. There's nothing left now but to fight. And I can certainly say that I have those feelings as well. I do. I wish I didn't, but I have this core feeling of wanting to fight. And I'm going to fight that feeling. Because I do think the answer is kindness, and I don't necessarily mean kindness to, quote-unquote, the enemy. If you see someone abusing somebody else's rights, you do not have to be kind to them. But you do have to be kind to others in general and to yourself. And I think that's what we need to focus on. So if you, like me, think things are going to be rough for a bit, I want you to consider that I was just on a boat in the middle of the Danube River with 24 wonderful people pointing out the fact that we were in the very river that Neanderthals were fishing in 30, 40, 50,000 years ago. Time is enormous, and you certainly get a sense of that when you visit Europe, because suddenly something 200 years old isn't old at all. And the United States isn't even 250 years old yet. We're very, very young country. We are still going through teething pains. And I think we're in one right now. And when you take that perspective, you realize that this too shall pass, and that there are other things to focus on, and you must focus on those things. Those things are very, very important. They're not frivolous. Others will try to shame you into thinking and caring about nothing else but politics. They will want you to give all your attention to fight, fight, fight. And I'm going to say, don't. I'm going to say it's okay not to anyway. I'm not going to tell you what to do. It is okay to focus on what you need to do right now. But I think the thing that we all need to do at some level is kindness. So I'm going to focus on that. I think I'm going to try to be more kind. I'm going to consider kindness mostly for the people who need it the most and less for the people that are causing that need, if you get what I'm saying. And we will sally forth and we will live our lives and we will remember that there is still music, there is still poetry, there is still love. All the things that make life wonderful still exist despite the coming storm. Did I mention I just went to a concentration camp? I'm going to save that for another time. But anyway, thank you for letting me get that off my chest. We are now going to continue with the podcast. And if you have anything to say about what I just said, please drop me a line at jeff@builttogo.com. That's two T's, not three. Not one. This podcast is made possible by the generous and kind folks who buy me diesel at buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. If you buy a gallon of diesel there, which is just a term for donating money to the podcast, honestly, you help prevent ads from being on the podcast, and that really makes this a better and more kind place to be. Okay, I'm going to stop using that word so much. But seriously, thank you. I absolutely appreciate, and I especially appreciate the monthly donors who just give every month. And I don't mention them by name because, I mean, it would get redundant. So anyway, thank you. I really appreciate it. Tech Talk. Snow socks. Snow socks? Isn't that a weird... It's like snow socks. Snocks you... Socks? Snocks? Snow... Snow socks, yes. Snow socks are replacements for tire chains. They're not something that you wear in the snow to keep your feet warm. They wouldn't actually do a very good job of that. But they're called socks because they're not chains. They're actually a cloth, like a heavy-duty cloth. And the idea is that they're much, much, much easier to put on than snow chains. But let's back up a little bit. What the heck are snow chains for? If you've lived your entire life in Texas, you probably like have heard of these things, but you're not really sure why anyone would want them. Well, the answer is that snow chains will give you the best possible grip in snowy and icy conditions. And in some parts of the U.S., like when you're crossing the Rockies, you may encounter interstates that have a chain requirement, which is that when the snow conditions are at a certain point, you will be required to have chains on your vehicle to even drive there. The problem is, chains, though effective, are a pain in the butt to put on. You basically have to lay them down, drive your vehicle over them, then snap them around the wheel, and then drive a little bit more, and then tighten them up. And then you have to repeat that on the other side. And you can't drive them on dry pavement, because it'll destroy the pavement. And also, they can damage your vehicle. If they come loose, the chains can whack against the side of your vehicle and cause all kinds of problems. And they're heavy and dirty, and I've used snow chains. They are amazing, but they are a pain in the butt. So there's a reason why snow socks exist. Snow socks are the same concept. You drive over them, and you tighten them up, but it's much, much quicker. And they're made of fabric, so they don't take up that much space. And if something happens, they're not going to damage your vehicle. And they're much cheaper. They're a really good solution. And in most places, from what I've read, you'll want to check this for yourself, they are considered snow chains for legal purposes. And do they work? Well, yes. I've watched a bunch of videos on them, and they do work. They don't work as well as chains, but they do work almost as well as good snow tires if you're in a snowy situation. They're not great for ice. So if you're in a situation where you're going driving on ice, like say on a frozen lake or something like that, snow socks aren't going to help very much. But if you are going to be doing winter driving and you're concerned about getting stuck in the snow or meeting legal requirements, snow socks are a great solution. Now, as with all of these things, I highly recommend that you learn how to put them on before you need them. You don't want to be trapped somewhere where it's snowing heavily and suddenly you have to learn how to put on the snow socks and it's night and windy and blowing and all this. Do it sometime in the summer, if you can. Do it someplace comfy so you can figure out how it works and it'll make it much, much easier. I'm not going to recommend a particular brand because I've never tried these things. There are cheaper ones that cost about $50. There's some that cost about $70 that are a little bit better. But, you know, you can get them on Amazon or even at Walmart or auto parts stores usually, especially in the snow belt. One important thing to know about snow socks. If you drive them on pavement and there's no snow, you're going to wear them out really quickly. They will get holes almost instantly. Now, those holes don't reduce performance. They make them ugly, and they contribute to wear, but the snow socks will still work even though they have holes. But these are definitely something that the more you use them, the more often you're going to have to replace them. So, you know, just keep that in mind. But again, they're a lot cheaper than chains. And when you do buy them, obviously make sure you know your tire size and make sure these are going to fit. And they come in packs of two. So if you have a rear-wheel drive van, well, heck, you know which wheels to put them on. But if you have an all-wheel drive van or a four-wheel drive van, you might want to consider getting four. I mean, you technically might not need it, but anyway, it's something to think about. I think that if you live in snowy conditions, these are a great idea, and you probably should have some in your van. And for $50, they're a pretty good investment. I promise you that needing a tow truck just once is going to cost you more than $50. So I'll have a link in the show notes to the general concept of snow socks on Amazon, but you should do your own research as to which ones to buy for you. However, they are not a gimmick. They are not some fake product. They actually do work. Testing has proved that. And you should consider them if you're going to be spending a lot of time in snowy conditions. Product review. Baofeng Radios UV5RM. Okay, lots to talk about here. These radios, they're two-way radios, a.k.a. walkie-talkies, and they're a little strange. These are not your normal radios. They're also probably illegal, but I don't know that anybody's going to ever enforce that. These are multi-frequency VHF and UHF radios. You can set any frequency you want in those spectra. They also get weather band and normal FM radio. You can actually just listen to the radio on these things. But you need licenses to use them on most of these frequencies. And in some cases, even with those licenses, you can't use them legally. So it takes a little bit of time to explain it. So let me start first by saying that we use these radios on our Death Valley trip. And they were awesome. No, they were really good. They lasted all day. We were able to talk over miles. In fact, there was one time that we had a van that had a flat tire way out in the desert. And we left a van with them and we sent two other vans forward. And we drove for a good 20 minutes. And then we got to a rest area and there was bathrooms there and stuff. And we waited for that other van to catch up, and we could still talk to them. We had no line of sight. This was like over a mountain, and I honestly don't know where they were in relation to us, but we were able to talk to them just fine. And this is with no repeaters, although ironically I was standing below a repeater when I was using it. But anyway, sorry to get confusing. They're very good because they're 10-watt radios. 10 watts. Very, very powerful for a handheld radio. And that's kind of the problem. You see, there are several radio frequencies for, let's call ourselves amateur radio users. There's FRS, I think stands for Family Radio Service, and that's open to anybody. You can use that, you just need a radio, and anyone can use those frequencies, and there's no problem. But you can only use them at a wattage of 0.5 watts, and we're exceeding that by 20 with these radios. So that's what we did. We used FRS because we figured that was the most legal. They also work on GMRS, which allows you to use a higher wattage, 2 watts in this case, so we'd only be 5 times more powerful, but you do need a license for those frequencies. And they will also broadcast on marine band, aviation band, and some ham radio bands, although I didn't mess with that, so I don't know too much about that. They have scanning. You just type in the frequency. You can set up frequencies as channels, so you can go through them. They're really amazing radios, especially because they only cost $39 a piece, about. They're easy to charge. The batteries themselves can charge directly to USB-C, and they usually come with a cradle you can plug them in. You can have a bunch of batteries separately if you want to. This review is getting too long, but I have to say that if you're looking for handheld radio communication, these things are great, with the caveat that they're not necessarily legal, and you're on your own for that. There were a bunch of YouTube videos about them. You can go ahead and search on Baofeng Radio is really all you need, and you'll see all the YouTube videos. And lots of controversy. A lot of the big radio guys hate these things. The amateurs who don't know what they're doing, like me, love them. And there's even a Wikipedia page about them, about the gray area these things exist in. So be good, be kind. There's that word again. Don't be abusive with these radios, because you absolutely could get into a situation like in a port and start broadcasting on the marine frequencies and get in trouble. I mean, in those cases, the authorities will find you and come after you if you're messing up anything commercial, not to mention air traffic control and things like that. But I'll have a link in the show notes if you want to check them out. I'm very, very impressed with the hardware and how these radios work. There is a bit of a learning curve, though, so be warned. This is something you're going to want to play with before you just kind of take it on a trip and expect it to work. But they do work. They work really well. Tales from the road. I promised you a real elephant. So we're going to have a real elephant. I may have told the story before, but it's worth telling again. In 2016, I went to Africa for the first time. And I was fortunate enough to visit South Africa, Zimbabwe, Zambia, or Zambia, I'm not sure what they prefer, and Botswana. Great trip, saw all kinds of things, loved it. But the way we got to Zimbabwe was a little different. You see, we flew to South Africa, and we flew to Zambia, and we took a van to Botswana. But we didn't do any of those things to get to Zimbabwe. We didn't take a boat. We didn't take a helicopter. We didn't take a train. We walked. We walked to Zimbabwe. And as crazy as that sounds, it actually isn't that crazy when you look at a map and you realize how things are. That in Zambia, there is a bridge across the Zambezi River from Zambia to Zimbabwe. And it's right where Victoria Falls is. This is one of the most beautiful places in the world. And they built the bridge right in front of the falls, which I'm sure upset some people because it kind of ruined the view of the falls from some places. But it also provided the best view of the falls. So I'm okay with it. We just walked across that, and there's a passport control center on the other side of the bridge. Went through that, and we entered Zimbabwe. But before we got to Zimbabwe, we had to pass a sign that said, exiting Zambia. And then we walked about 100 feet, and there was another sign that said, entering Zimbabwe. And you can see the conundrum here. After you exit Zambia, and before you enter Zimbabwe, where are you? Well, the answer was at hand. There was a man there with carved wooden figures. And as we walked by him, he said, "Hello, hello, come here, I have things to sell you. I am the president of Zimzam." And he had declared himself the president of this 100-foot area between the two signs that he called Zimzam. And I'm like, who am I to disagree? I definitely think that is Zimzam, and there's another country I've been to. I've met the president. I haven't met a lot of presidents in my life. I'm not sure I've met any, actually, but I have met one. And he was the president of Zimzam, and he sold me one of the ugliest carvings I have ever seen in my life. In fact, we had an argument about what it represented. He said it was a Pumba, which is a warthog. I don't think so, but anyway, I still have that. That's not the story. The story is that when we got to Zimbabwe, we went through passport control, which was a little scary because they took all our passports and disappeared and we didn't know what was going on. But after a while, they brought them back with stamps. And we got directions to go to a restaurant that had a bar right over the border in Zimbabwe. It was a tourist restaurant bar, a place where a lot of people went, and it was walkable. And so, you know, we started walking, and we found out that there was a shortcut. You know, you could get there on the main roads, but there was a shortcut that was significant kind of through the bushes. And we thought, sure, we'll do that. Now, in retrospect, walking through the bushes in Africa is a little bit different than walking through the bushes in, say, Illinois or even Colorado. And whatever. We were having fun. We were going to go have a beer. And then we saw these people running towards us, jogging, kind of laughing, but yet jogging with a purpose. And they were tourists like we were, and we found out later they were Canadians. Except they said something a little bit strange. They said, "Hey guys, restaurant's right down there, but watch out for the elephant." And we're like, what the hell is he talking? What is this? Is this some kind of a joke? I mean, is this like an Africa joke? One of those jokes that, you know, Africans will tell to other people in Africa. And all right, whatever. Like, thanks. Okay, yeah, we got it. Whatever. Okay. So we're walking through the bush and noticing how red the soil is and how tall the bushes are. And we go around the corner and there's an elephant. An angry elephant. A very large, angry elephant not very far from us. And it was looking right at us. And it stuck its trunk in the air and went, "Woo!" And then it stomped its feet. Now, I don't speak elephant. I don't necessarily know when an elephant is trying to communicate to me. But in this case, I was pretty clear that the message was, "I'm gonna mess you up." And, you know, we're in Africa, there's an elephant about to attack us, what do you do? And of course, I'm the group leader, right? So the people with me look to me like, okay, Jeff, now what? And the now what was basically me saying, "Nice elephant, good elephant, oh, what a pretty elephant," as we slowly walked by and it followed us with its eyes. Because, right or wrong, I figured our only hope of surviving this encounter was for it not to charge, so I needed to not be a threat to it. And I knew that walking towards it would be seen as a threat, and I thought that maybe, you know, running away really fast screaming would also not be the right thing to do. And so I considered everything and made the split decision to just kind of gently walk by and say nice things to it, just for the heck of it. And the elephant watched us as we walked by, and that was it. We kept walking and made it to the bar and had a drink of Zambezi beer on the edges of this cliff hanging over the Zambezi River where we could see the falls. It was awesome. Awesome. But we knew we had to go back. And where's the elephant? Yeah, we bummed a ride. The heck with that. We were not going to go down that path again and see the elephant. We actually bummed a ride in the parking lot from some of the other tourists who had rented a car, and they drove us to the passport station. And we did not have another encounter with the elephant. Folks, that's a thing that happened. I can actually say that I had an encounter with an angry elephant while I was defenseless and on foot with many of my favorite people. And we lived to tell the tale. But please don't take that as advice. My advice to you would be to avoid meeting wild elephants in the bush. Don't do that. It's bad. A place to visit. Well, folks, we were just in Budapest. That is how they pronounce it there. I learned a little bit about Hungarian pronunciation, and if you see the letter S all by itself, it is pronounced like SH. If you see the letter S with a Z after it, it is pronounced like a normal S. And since the word Budapest has just a single S in it, that is the correct pronunciation. So it is Budapest. And Budapest is actually two cities. It's Buda and Pest. One is on one side of the river and one is on the other. And they are legally joined together, Buda being the hilly side with the castle, and Pest being the side that has all the hotels and entertainment and stuff. But we were in Budapest. It was wonderful. A great, great city. you know, one of those fantastic cities that you feel completely safe and there's tons to do and things are relatively inexpensive for Americans. I love it. I definitely think you should go there. But when you go there, I want to tell you about something that's there that's actually pretty cool. I mean, there's a lot of pretty cool things in Budapest. You're not going to have any trouble finding things to do, but I want you to check out this one thing. They are the hidden mini statues of Budapest. Yes, see, there was a guy by the name of, and my apologies for pronouncing this incorrectly, Mihaly Kolodko. It's a gorilla sculptor. That gorilla, G-U-E-R, yeah, you get it. Okay, a gorilla sculptor who made all these little tiny sculptures and just hid them all over the city. And you can kind of think of him as like the Banksy of sculptors. They all had some kind of a meaning, and they're actually really cool. Now, there is a map where all these are, but it was not great. It was off by as much as a mile in these cases. And these are little tiny things that you just see in places. And we did find some. I mean, I didn't find any personally, I don't think, but someone with us, Susie, by the way, I could spend many hours talking about Susie. She is truly an extraordinary person. But one of her gifts is to be able to see things like this. And she found a few of these statues for us. And they were great. For example, one of the ones she found is a statue called Libido. And you can look them up on the internet and learn something about them. But Libido is a little bit more deep than it appears at first. It is a dog with a bone, but it's a balloon animal dog, and the bone is really big. And if you look closely, you realize that the balloon animal is actually made out of condoms. Now, this is brass, bronze, one of those things we're talking about here. It's not actually made out of actual condoms, but you can understand what I'm saying here. It's a balloon animal where the balloons are condoms. And the bone was this odd shape. I mean, so imagine stereotypical bone shape, like from a pirate flag, except the little knobs at the end of the bone were nipples, as though it were breasts. So it was a work of art that called up these sexual things, yet it was just a balloon animal dog. So, you know, libido. Anyway, you can interpret the art any way you want. I'm just telling you what I saw. And I thought, that's kind of an interesting thing. There is a Rubik's Cube that's hidden on a bridge abutment because the Rubik's Cube was invented in Budapest. There's a lunar rover on a round kind of a bollard because it looks like the moon. And one that I saw that I took a picture of, and I'm not even sure I realized it was a miniature sculpture, was a rat kind of climbing up a wall, and there's graffiti right in front of it. And I think the sculptor put the sculpture there to make it look like the rat was drawing the graffiti. But then somebody else came by and painted a Banksy-style cat walking along the wall near the rat. So anyway, it's kind of fun. A lot of them are very cool, and you could easily spend probably a few days trying to find them all. They're very, very cute. Just one other. Oh, yeah, I just found the rat on the internet. It was absolutely real. The rat is called Ratatouille, and it actually says here it's based on the works of Banksy. So, okay, I got that right. I didn't even realize that. There's another cute one that I didn't find, but I want to mention it because it's so cute. There is a practice of tourists leaving locks on the bridges here in Budapest, which, by the way, side rant, don't do that. Please do not go places and leave locks on things. This was a quaint little thing that was done in Paris, and then it was done in Venice, and now so many people are doing it that they're actually damaging the bridges. And the truth is that people are just going to cut them off anyway. They have maintenance crews going around cutting all the locks off. You're wasting your time doing this. Instead, put your hand on the rail and put your loved one's hand on yours and take a picture of that. And then go back in 10, 20, 30 years and take the same picture. That's going to have a lot more meaning than some lock that's actually causing damage. Anyway, these locks are there, and the sculptor actually made a hammock between the locks. So he made a bronze hammock that goes from one half to the other. And inside the hammock is Franz Josef, one of the Austrian emperors, former king of Hungary. You could read anything political into that you would like. Anyway, very fun thing. It's one of the fun things about travel is finding these little things. Obviously, Budapest has a huge history, and there's 8 million gazillion things to see. But it's these little whimsical things that make me happy, and so I just thought I would point that out to you. I will have a link in the show notes to an article about them, and you can see some of the pictures, but by far the most fun is finding them for yourself. Resource recommendation. I'm going to rant a little bit. This is my day for ranting. I mean, I have many days of ranting, but this is definitely one, and I'm going to blame the jet lag. Folks, flower pot heaters are bad. It's not that they just don't work. They're bad. And I am shocked to look and see they've gotten more popular in the last couple of years. And maybe it's TikTok and, oh, heat your whole home for 4 cents an hour with a candle heater. And okay. I have a link in the show notes to an excellent video that explains all the reasons why you do not want a candle heater. It's not over the top. He's not warning you that they might explode, which is actually possible. He's just saying they don't work. They're a waste of your time and space. And he's right, because physics. The first law of thermodynamics, and it is a law, folks. There's no getting around this one, is you can't create energy. And if you light a candle, it doesn't matter what you do to that candle, it's only going to give off as much heat as a candle can. And then I hear people saying, oh, but if you put the flower pot over the candle, the flower pot heats up and radiates the heat and you get more heat. And you don't. You don't. You're not getting more heat. You're getting the same amount of heat, maybe distributed a little bit differently. And that heat does not go very far. So I constantly hear people saying, well, I'm sorry it didn't work for you, it works for me. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. You think it does, because you get inside your van and close the door and light this thing up, and then you realize, oh, it's not that cold in here. It's not the candle heater that's heating up your van, it's probably you. You give off more heat than the candle in aggregate. You're not as hot as the candle, which can be as hot as 1400 degrees, but you're giving off a lot of heat because you are a living thing. And, you know, that heat is trapped inside your van. So you are not going to get any more heat than you would out of a regular candle. The flower pot doesn't do anything except maybe slow down how the heat's distributed. But it's so little heat that it's not going to warm the inside of your van, no matter what the TikTok videos and everything says. Because it's physics. That's why I'm so sure about this. We're talking about something that we know. This is a known thing. Now, if you just want some place to warm up your hands, I mean, yeah, I suppose you could put a candle under a flower pot and that would warm up a little bit and you could rub your hands over it and go, ooh, that's nice. Or you could just put on a pair of gloves. I don't know. Anyway, the reason I'm so passionate about this isn't because it's a waste of time and space. It's because they are dangerous. Having an open flame in your vehicle is always dangerous. It will use up oxygen. It will release noxious gases. Probably not that much, but it will. And it's real easy to knock it over. And you might be like, oh, but the candle just goes out if you knock it over. But consider that liquid paraffin is incredibly flammable, and it can become a flammable vapor, and it doesn't take much spark to light it up. Because the scenario that happens is people light a candle, they think it works, and then they're like, well, what about two candles? What about three candles? You know, I've got that giant bag of tea candles from IKEA that costs like $2. What if you tip one candle over, and sure, the flame might go out, but the other candles will ignite the vapors from the paraffin, and then you've got a really hot flash fire in your van where you absolutely do not want a flash fire. Anyway. If you have any doubts about what I'm saying, please watch this video from a channel called Garden Fundamentals. This guy's a gardener. He's not even a van life person. He's just trying to help people garden better. And he has seen people use these in gardening sheds. And he explains in nice, easy to understand detail why these things don't work. Get a diesel heater. Seriously. Or if you can't afford a diesel heater and you don't have the setup for it, get a 12-volt heated blanket. That will keep you warm. Or get a dog. Dogs are good. Dogs keep you warm. Folks, thank you very much for listening to this yet again strange episode. I promise you this will not become a political podcast, because I know we all need a break. And the politics aren't the most important part of van life. So this is a one-off. Music, as always, is by Simon Wegg. And until next time, remember the words of Banana Yoshimoto, who said, "But I have my life. I'm living it. It's twisted, exhausting, uncertain, and full of guilt. But nonetheless, there's something there."